Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team appreciates you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, we'll talk with Colonel Scott Fisher about the Officers Christian Fellowship. Then Marine vet Donnie Donenbaugh will tell us about the Coalition of Americans Heroes and review the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Colonel Scott Fisher. Scott runs the Officers Christian Fellowship, an organization that was very important to me when I was on active duty, and I served on their board for a while. They do things right. Welcome, Scott. Glad you could come back.
Thank you. It is great to be back with you today, Denny.
Scott, take a minute and tell us about your time in uniform. When and why did you join?
All right. I joined at the Air Force Academy after just turning 18 years of age. My grandfather and father had both served in the Navy. Interestingly, I served 27 years with my wife in the Air Force, and we now have one son in the Army and one in the Marines. So whether you call that joint or dysfunctional, I'll let you decide. But it was a great and incredible honor just to be able to serve. Graduated, went to pilot training, and ended up flying F-16s and doing some things with congressional relations for over 6 years, and also working in some of our embassies around the world. So it was an extraordinary honor to be able to serve. And one of the main commonalities that I had at each location is that my wife and I were a part of this organization called Officers Christian Fellowship, and just got to join together with other men and women who were serving in uniform and their families, who also had a passion for the Lord and wanted to know, how do you integrate your faith authentically while serving with excellence, both as a military leader and a Christian leader?
The Officers Christian Fellowship, it's always been run by officers, but when I first joined it 50-something years ago, it was really just for officers and their families. Now it's open to all members of the military community, right?
That is correct. I often like to say that we are called Officers Christian Fellowship not because we are ministry to officers, but that we are ministry through officers who, by His grace, will positively impact the entire military community with Christ-like leaders. On a very personal nature, my son, who's enlisted as a Marine, and my other son's enlisted in the Army. So my prayer is that OCF will be as powerful in their lives as it was in my wife and mine.
Yes, sir. I certainly understand that. Okay. Give us an overview of OCF. What is it? How does it work?
Yeah, Officers Christian Fellowship is a ministry to the military community by those in the military community. We engage military leaders in biblical growth and fellowship to equip them for Christ-like service at the intersection of faith, family, and profession. So we predominantly work through volunteers. We are a member-led ministry of about 15,500 members around the world. And the idea is that if you can equip and disciple the members who are still wearing the uniform and their families, then God can take them to places that nobody else has access to. As you may know, there, if you count the civilians and Guard and Reserve, there are 2.9 million employees in the Department of Defense in 4,800 locations in over 160 countries around the world. So the military community represents one of the nation's largest opportunity for impacting God's kingdom. So our goal and our mission is to train those who are still wearing the uniform so that they can know and have a passion for the Word of God and be able to teach that and engage others primarily through small group fellowships. And then what we have found is that through all the moves that military families often do, if you have at the center of your life a passion for the Lord and an understanding of the joys and challenges of what it means to be a military leader, then you can connect more deeply and authentically much faster, which is incredibly important when you're constantly moving every 2 or 3 years. So that is our goal.
Yes, sir. What you just described is what happened to me. I was helping run the ROTC department at Stanford University, and a couple of my friends were being sent by the Army to graduate school at Stanford, and they invited me to a Bible study. And I tried to think of an excuse why I shouldn't go. I counted on my wife, but she wanted to go. And the next thing you knew, we were drawing closer to the Lord and committing our lives. It just been the most amazing thing in my life. So the fact that you can do that, wow. I mean, and then you can do it other ways too. But one of the things I appreciate is the family outreach. You've got a couple of retreat centers, don't you?
We do, absolutely. We have two conference centers, which are really genuinely world-class conference centers. One is outside of Buena Vista in Colorado on the backside of Mount Princeton called Spring Canyon. And one is about 3 hours outside of D.C. called White Sulphur Springs in the Allegheny Mountains of Pennsylvania. And these conference centers serve in many ways as a spiritual depot, if you will, for the military families, in a place where they can constantly come back and have what we like to call a vacation with a purpose, where they can come together as a family and come together with other military families, but come centered around, again, speakers who understand the challenges of what it means to live within the military community and speak authentically to how does scripture apply to some of those challenges and joys. Just this summer alone, we had about 1,800 people come through our two conference centers. And in January and February, with our outreach to cadets and midshipmen, in just 2 months alone then, we had 800 cadets and midshipmen pouring into the Word of God and coming together in fellowship, which just excites me like nothing else. And I mention that with the numbers, not because numbers in and of themselves matter, but because each one of those numbers is a life made in the image of God. And also each one of those numbers is somebody who's being trained and equipped to understand the Word of God and then apply it to their life as a leader within the military community. And then finally, as you mentioned, your long history with OCF, we've been around since World War II, and those numbers that are continuing to grow show that despite what you may see in the media or the news, there is an incredible hunger and thirst of people of all ages within the military community to come to the Word of God and have authentic relationships built around what He says in His Word.
And that only is true because it works.
Absolutely.
That was one of the most practical decisions and commitments I ever made. You know, I know that OCF is a nonprofit, so that means you do accept contributions. So we're getting close to our end of our time. How can people plug in, learn how they can plug into something locally and or contribute? How can they do that?
The easiest way, Denny, is to go to OCFUSA.org. Again, so just OCFUSA.org. You can learn all about OCF, about our history, about the incredible ministry that the Lord is allowing us to do today at the academies, at gateway locations, at military service school locations like Leavenworth and Maxwell. And they can look and see what we are doing. And in there, there's also a place where, yes, you can donate and help us sustain and expand what the Lord is doing in and through OCF. We rely, over half of our funding is through contributions. The other half is through revenues that we make at our conference centers. And we absolutely would welcome anybody to come in, look at what we do, look at the way that we spend and steward the money that the Lord has entrusted to us. We take that incredibly seriously. And most of all, we take seriously the stewardship of being able to reach this unique group of leaders, because we believe that if you can change the hearts of leaders, that scripture and history both show us you can change the course of nations. And that is our desire, by God's grace, to positively impact both the military community and our nation through these leaders.
Okay. And if I had a son, or if I was getting ready to be transferred somewhere, is there a way that I can plug in to find out who to plug in when I get there?
That's a great question. And absolutely, that is actually one of the main benefits of OCF. You can go on to that same website at OCFUSA.org, and you can click on Get Connected, and you can actually look at different military installations, and you can see who is the contact at that location and what Bible study we have there. And we would love to be able to connect with you. If you happen to have your son or daughter going to a place that you don't see listed on there, which there are some, because again, since we rely upon volunteers, these individuals sometimes rotate out every couple of years, and there may be a pause just for the moment. And we encourage people then to step into the gap and lead and do that. But if you find a place that you don't see a name, if you call our office there and the number's listed under the contact, we will gladly get you in contact. And I just want to say, because many people ask us all the time, hey, can sons and daughters still serve as Christians in the military? And my answer is a resounding yes, absolutely. I do not want to see a U.S. military that is void of Christian leaders within it. So if you entrust us with your sons and daughters, we would love to be able to get them connected and equipped with other believers so that they can live out their faith authentically where the Lord has called them to serve.
Yes, sir. Scott, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for your service to our Lord.
Thank you so much, Denny.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do about 50. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Unexpected situations do happen. Our nationwide network of self-defense attorneys is always ready to defend you in a criminal and/or civil case. There are zero attorney's fees for covered events and no hourly limits, caps, or deductibles. That means no matter how high your attorney's fees are, they're all covered through your low monthly membership payment. Join U.S. Law Shield today and receive immediate coverage, affordable, customizable membership options, and peace of mind.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Marine vet Donnie Donbaugh. He's a combat veteran. He's the vice president of the Coalition for America's Heroes. What more can I say? Welcome, brother. Glad you could join us.
Dennis, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, sir.
Donnie, start by telling us about your time in the Marines. Why did you join? What did you do?
So, funny enough, I actually went to an Army recruiter because I had an older brother that had served as an artilleryman at Fort Sill in Oklahoma. Told me how great the Army was, and I thought, man, that sounds pretty cool. My family grew up at Des Moines, Iowa, super poor, like food stamp and box of government cheese and government cereal on the porch each week, poor. And I thought, what a cool way to get a job and get out of Des Moines once I get out of high school. So I went to the Army recruiter at the mall, and he happened to be at lunch. And the Marine recruiter, that sly-tongued devil, was hanging out. And he said, hey, what do you want to talk to that guy for? And I said, well, I was hoping to talk to him about joining the Army. And he said, well, come on in here for a second. You know, I was 17 years old, junior in high school. And he said, what do you want to talk to him about joining the Army for? And I told him, well, my brother was in the Army. And I just thought I would kind of follow in his footsteps and see what they had to offer. And he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm not really sure. What do you guys have to offer? And he said, well, first of all, the Marine Corps is unlike any other branch of service. And, you know, he walked me down the whole pride, you know, the ego, globe, and anchor, the difference between joining the Marine Corps and just kind of the esprit de corps that I believe that the Marine Corps has. And that was it. I guess I took it hook, line, and sinker. He loved to hear that. And the rest was history. I signed on the dotted line. I finished my senior year of high school. And they did delay my shipping off to boot camp by about a week. So instead of going on August 10th, I went on August 17th, and I spent 3 months in MCRD San Diego. And after about a week, you realize how torturous it is that they put MCRD San Diego right next to the San Diego airport. So then you watch every single airplane that lands and takes off at the San Diego airport. And after about 1 week, you wish that you were on every single one of those things, just getting out of there. But I loved it. You know, boot camp sucks. You know, they don't make it easy for a reason. And there were times during boot camp where I said, man, this really sucks. I don't think this is for me. And obviously I stuck it out. We started with about 95 guys, finished with 71. after boot camp, I had chosen to go as an 0311 infantry rifleman. And I kid you not, when I was in the Marine Corps recruiter's office, the guy said, what kind of job would interest you? And of course, you know, having served, you go to the office where you take the ASVAB and you do all the training and everything, the MEPS station, you take the ASVAB. And originally I was going to go into aviation technology type field, you know, smart stuff, work on aircraft, mechanics. And for whatever reason, I saw the poster with the guy with the helmet and the flak jacket and the cool looking weapon that was behind the Marine Corps recruiter's desk. And I said, well, what kind of a job would carry stuff like that? And he said, oh, well, that's special ops, that's infantry, that's, you know, those are, that's that kind of job. And I said, well, okay, I'll take that. What I should have said, what he should have told me was, if you want to be a 28-year-old with arthritis in your neck, back, knees, and ankles, that's the job for you. But I took it. And so after boot camp, I went to the School of Infantry. That was another 8 weeks or so. And then that was it. And then I was in the infantry and I loved it. Got to do a lot of really cool things, hanging out underneath helicopters, doing a lot of urban operation, training stuff. Spent time at Camp Pendleton, spent time at Lejeune, spent time at different Air Force bases in Arizona and Camp Pendleton. I truly enjoyed it. And met my wife while I was in the Marine Corps, had a child. And then just before my daughter turned one, I was sent to Iraq. And then that's probably the part of my story that is the reason that you and I are talking, because if I hadn't been sent to Iraq, then fast forward to, you know, the date that I was on the other end of a crazy irate driver south of Baghdad that shot me in the face, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Marine vet Danny Donbaugh. Okay, Donnie, I know that you are involved with, in leadership, the Coalition of America's Heroes. Talk to us about that. What do they do? Who do they do it for? How do they do it?
So the coalition was actually started in 2004 in the halls of the Brooks Army Medical Center in San Antonio, because they were seeing such a huge influx of folks in Iraq and Afghanistan that were coming back with burns, amputations, people like me with physical wounds from gunshots, from explosives. And so they saw the need, because if they weren't in the hospital settings and they were being medically retired or discharged, they were being pushed into the VA system. Some were forced, and the VA wasn't ready to deal with that yet. And so there was a huge need for financial support, for support for some of these folks that were in the hospitals for years early on in the wars, to be able to maintain two households, because some of them didn't know if they were going to be in the hospital for 4 months or 18 months or 2 years. So the coalition came alongside them and provided a lot of emergency support, diapers, formula, auto insurance, plane tickets, computers to be able to communicate with family back home, and just really was kind of a bridge between the uncertainty that a lot of these families faced early on. So I said, I got shot in the face. I was in the hospital. Once I got out, I started volunteering to reach out to some of these folks that were isolating themselves and putting up walls and not putting themselves into a healthy situation. And so I jumped into advocacy right away. And my job was to reach out to them and help to bring them into a healthier mental headspace and a healthier physical space for them and their families, to just help push them along in their recovery. And that's what the coalition is still doing 20 years later, with a marriage retreat that we put on every year. We have a program for our kids, because our kids didn't volunteer to serve and to get blown up and to deal with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. And then our big core program is emergency financial support, that we are one of the smallest teams of nonprofits out there that provide support nationwide. And yet we're doing more for emergency financial support than almost any other organization that's out there. And it's a huge strain on us. And it's an uphill battle for us that we're fighting every day. And I think, you know, between the holiday meal checks that we send out and our financial support and our children's program, that's probably the area where we would love to see some of the communities that are listening to this broadcast, some of the people that are checking out your website or checking out ours or our Facebook pages. That's where we would really love to see the support come along, because people aren't hearing about our wars as much, even though we're still getting people wounded in Iraq and Syria and other places. They're not hearing about it every day, so they don't think that the need is there. But to be perfectly honest, we're getting more calls for help now than at any other point in the war since the height of this thing in like 2004. We're getting more calls for this now in 2024 than we ever did. And we have the least amount of funding because people don't think that the need is there, but it is. And you know, we're out here scraping and we're turning over stones and we're calling and we're mailing and we're pretty much doing everything that we can to stay ahead of it. Because if we don't stay ahead of it, then veterans get desperate. And when veteran families get desperate, then the veterans are using the words like foreclosure and eviction. And eventually we're hearing the word suicide, and then the families are left to pick up pieces, and so are their friends. And ultimately, we don't want it to come to that.
Well said, Donnie. It's clear that you're a nonprofit, and it's clear you can use financial support. How can listeners support you?
So we're most active on social media, which is Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, which is our website and the Facebook and everything. But the website is www.saluteheroes.org. But if you're on Facebook, which, I mean, who isn't on Facebook these days? The Facebook is Salute Heroes. And if you click through there, you're hearing me right now on this interview. You're going to see my smiling face because I've got all kinds of goofy posts on our Facebook page and some of the things that I do for Christmas and, you know, with our gift checks and things. So you're hearing me. But if you want to see what this awesome not for radio voice, if you want to see what this face looks like, go ahead and scroll through Facebook on our Salute Heroes page, and you will come across the images of the Donnie Doffenbaugh.
Donnie, thank you. Thank you for your appropriate comments and for your service to our nation and for what you're doing now. God bless you, brother.
Oh, Dennis, thank you for having us. You're giving us a voice to share our story and build awareness for what we're doing. And that's never been more important than it is right now. So my thanks to you, sir.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying silver and gold to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Veterans swore an oath to defend this country, and that oath doesn't expire when we take off the uniform.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and military families the opportunity to continue serving their country by taking on the most important issues our country is facing.
A better foreign policy, quality health care for veterans, responsible spending, and more.
Learn more about how you can play a part by visiting CVAFrontlines.com. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it is time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining me is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Denny.
Chris, give us a quick review of your time in Mother Army. You had quite a bit of time and you were a flyboy most of it, weren't you?
I was, yeah. Branched aviation out of West Point. Did all the normal career stuff as a junior officer, you know, platoon leader, company commander, battalion staff. And then just to fast forward, I got to command an aviation battalion in Iraq during the surge, which was, you know, quite a wild ride. And that led to some other good things, being a brigade commander, deploying units to both Afghanistan and Iraq. And then, lo and behold, they want to pin a star on me and send me to Bosnia to command the NATO headquarters there, which was fascinating. And then moved into the Pentagon and did Army staff stuff and finished out at NORTHCOM in the ops section there. So really interesting, rewarding, fantastic career.
Well, it sounds great. The Battle of the Month is the Battle of Camden. And that was not an easy one, was it?
No, in fact, so Camden was August 16th of 1780. American Revolution, obviously. Southern Theater, which we don't talk as much about, you know, in our history classes. This is Major General Horatio Gates, the hero of Saratoga, versus Lieutenant General Lord Earl Cornwallis, which most of your listeners have heard that name. Now, why should we know this battle? I like to start with this. So this was the worst battlefield defeat for the Americans in the entire war, which is probably why we don't study it as much. It ended Gates' career, kind of disgrace, because he fled the battlefield so far, so fast. But it was also this destruction of the Southern Continental Army. So, I mean, this was like things looked bleak because the road to victory looked open for the British if they could just move up the Carolinas and into Virginia and cut off the rebellion in the North, which was the plan. So here's the summary. By the fifth year of the war, the North had kind of reached a stalemate, as most of your listeners know. Sir Henry Clinton opened his Southern strategy. I use air quotes, you know, Southern strategy, because Britain always lacked manpower. That was always their challenge. And they wanted to leverage loyalist support in the South and isolate the rebellion in the North, kind of cut off some of its supply chain or you know, lines of supply. And so that was his plan. So he invades Charleston in May of 1780. He moves inland. Then he leaves Cornwallis in charge. So Cornwallis starts recruiting and training loyalists, because there were loyalists in the South, sets up outposts and forts because he's going to subdue the countryside, build loyalist support, and start moving up north eventually to, you know, again, cut off the Northern Rebellion, as you were. So rebel militias start harassing him from the beginning, so it's always a problem. On 9 August, Cornwallis gets word that Horatio Gates is leading a Continental Army south towards Camden. Camden is Cornwallis's northernmost base of supply outpost for his movements north. So Gates, meanwhile, is moving south. He takes command of 1,400 Continentals under Baron DeKalb. Soon they're adding groups of militia to their ranks, a bunch of militia, which is critical for the battle we'll talk about real quick. Gates was, you know, he takes a direct route. He's a little bit impatient. He wants to seek battle and kind of attack Camden, surprising Cornwallis. But Cornwallis, meanwhile, he arrives in Camden on the 13th. He decides to move north at night to surprise Gates. So both commanders are moving towards each other to surprise each other. So this is one of the great coincidences of warfare. They're both on the same road, moving at night to surprise each other. Neither one knows the other guy's moving. So they hit each other at night. They skirmish. They decide to fight in the morning. So at dawn, Gates forms his lines and Cornwallis moves his army forward, starts moving from column to line for battle. The Continentals blow three cannons into their front ranks, tear them up a little bit. And then the militia, so this is militia and regulars here in the Continental Army. So the militia is on the left flank. They start charging the British, you know, they mount bayonets and they charge and the left flank collapses. This is not the militia's finest day. Now the Continentals try to hang on, but they just can't. There's a gap that forms between the lines and Tarleton takes the British cavalry into the gap and really surrounds them. And you know, it's a rout. This is a total rout. The Continental Army in the South is lost. Gates flees in, you know, like 200 miles in 20 hours, and it's just really disgraceful. So this is a critical battle. It looks like all is lost in the South, and you know, Continental Army's destroyed. So things look really good for the Brits. Luckily, that all changes in the months ahead, leading to Yorktown. But that's why this battle is significant.
Well, it certainly was a situation that does happen in war.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're ready and something doesn't go right and the other person takes advantage of it and you aren't ready for that. Crystal balls aren't that good in combat, in my experience.
No, they're not. This thing is plagued by Gates takes over a tired and dispirited army. He moves them south and they're hungry. He feeds them raw fruit off the vine and mashed corn and molasses and creates diarrhea in the whole force as they're marching, you know, that the night before the battle. So, I mean, there's lots of little things at play here, but Cornwallis deserves credit. You know, he takes the offense, he seizes it and he gets the initiative, and his smaller force really just kicks Gates' army's butt. And the militia really, not the finest moment of the militia. They just crumble when the British regulars charge with bayonets. But there's a lot of brave fighting on the Continental side too. I mean, they really did try to stand their ground, and they almost won the fight on the Continental's right flank, but it was just too much.
No, and militias are not regular forces. They've got good hearts, but they're not as well trained. And that's just part of the deal.
That's right. You got to know how to use them. And, you know, it's interesting because Gates used them well at Saratoga, but a lot of the credit on that was due to other people at Saratoga. We know that. But, militia demonstrates itself really capable in the months following this, both at Camden and Kings Mountain. So the militia does great, but here they were not used correctly. It was common knowledge that the British would put their heavy charge on the right, you know, emphasizing the right flank. It was always stronger. And so Gates puts the militia on the left flank to counter it. There was a bunch of mistakes.
Oh, well, there's, you know, that's life. And that certainly is true in combat. So that does happen.
That's why we study this stuff, because we learn from it. And hopefully our future commanders can learn from it.
Amen. This is Colonel Denny Gillam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. Chris, we've got a couple of minutes. Talk to us about Battle Digest. That's a really good vehicle for folks that want to study America's history in combat.
Yeah, it's, not everyone likes reading the 300-page books all the time. So what I've done is I've really crystallized this history of warfare and these key battles into 6-panel trifold brochures. They're beautiful. They're concise, they're deeply researched, and you get all the key aspects of the battle and what happened and why did someone win and why did someone lose. It's great history, really compact. It's battledigest.com. Some of your listeners have already signed up and are enjoying it. Battledigest.com.
About how many battles do you have in Battle Digest right now?
Well, I have 34 in print now. I do one a quarter. Most people subscribe and they get a new one mailed to them every quarter. So it's just easy and it's fun. It's like Christmas morning when they get their new Battle Digest. They can sit and read it and digest the whole thing in 30 minutes.
You know, that, as a guy who loves history, that's delightful.
It is. It's a great way to learn history and refresh yourself on these key battles.
And then if that excites you, you can go into all the detail and read the 400-page books, right?
That's right. I even have suggested readings on each issue to further your study if you want to. So battledigest.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for this great review, some cool history, and thanks for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm glad we're friends.
Thanks, Denny. Me too.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillam. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place for coins, and it's a really great place to go just to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. You'll like it. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me through our website or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel Perry, who was not a vet, really appreciated your coverage of the war Israel is having. It was good to get different perspectives.
Thanks, Terry. Israel is committed to do what's best for Israel, and I support that.
And Navy vet Michelle had heard of Tunnels to Towers, but had no idea what they did. What a great organization.
Agree, Michelle. That's my wife and I support them monthly. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, on 23 August 1864, during our Civil War, having doggedly withstood naval bombardment for over 2 weeks and invested by Union soldiers ashore, Brigadier General Page surrendered Fort Morgan, the last Confederate bastion at Mobile Bay. Quote, "My guns and powder had all been destroyed, my means of defense gone, the citadel, nearly the entire quartermaster stores, and a portion of the commissariat burned by the enemy's shells," he reported. It was evident the fort could hold out but a few hours longer under a renewed bombardment. The only question was, hold it for this time, gain the publicity, and sustain the loss of life from the falling of the walls, or save life and capitulate.
I think he done right. Also on 23rd of August, 1864, the Geneva Convention of 1864 for the amelioration of the condition of the wounded and sick of armies in the field is adopted by 12 nations in Geneva. The agreement, advocated by Swiss humanitarian Jeanhart Durant, called for a nonpartisan care of the sick and wounded in times of war and provided for the neutrality of medical personnel. It also proposed the use of international emblem to mark medical personnel and supplies. In honor of Durant's nationality, a red cross on a white background, the Swiss flag in reverse was chosen. In 1901, Durant was awarded the first Nobel Peace Prize. In 1881, the American humanitarians Clara Barton and Adolphus Solomons founded the American National Red Cross, an organization designed to provide humanitarian aid to victims of wars and of natural disasters in concurrence with the International Red Cross.
Colonel, I got to tell you, I'm very impressed. Amelioration of the condition of the wounded, you know, but can you say that three times real fast?
I can't say it once really fast.
Okay. On 19 August 1934, Adolf Hitler, already chancellor, was also elected president of Germany in an unprecedented consolidation of power in the short history of the Republic.
And on 21 August 1944, representatives of the U.S., Great Britain, and the Soviet Union and China met at Georgetown, Washington, D.C. to formulate a formal principles of an organization that will provide collective security on a worldwide basis. That organization would become the United Nations.
And on 19 August 1953, the Iranian military, with the support and financial assistance of our government, overthrew the government of Premier Mohammad Mossadegh and reinstated the Shah of Iran. Iran remained a solid Cold War ally of ours until a revolution ended the Shah's rule in 1979. And then, boy, it all broke loose, didn't it, Colonel?
The terrorists showed up. And on 19th of August, 1960, in the USSR, captured American U-2 pilot Francis Gary Powers was sentenced to 10 years imprisonment for his confessed espionage. On the 1st of May, 1960, Powers took off from Pakistan at the controls of an ultra-sophisticated Lockheed U-2 high-altitude reconnaissance aircraft. A CIA-employed pilot, he was to fly over some 2,000 miles of Soviet territory to a military airfield in Norway, collecting intelligence information en route. Roughly halfway through his journey, he was shot down by the Soviets over Svartovstok in the Ural Mountains. Forced to bail out at 15,000 feet, he survived the parachute jump, but was promptly arrested by Soviet authorities.
And on 21 August 1965, it was revealed by MACV headquarters, Headquarters Military Assistance Command Vietnam, in Saigon, that our pilots now had approval to destroy any Soviet-made missiles they saw while raiding North Vietnam. This was a major change from earlier orders that restricted them to bombing only previously approved targets.
That was a good change. I don't know why the previous restriction made sense. On 22 August 1968, in the streets of Prague and in the UN headquarters in New York City, Czechs protested against the Soviet invasion of their nation. The protests served to highlight the brutality of the Soviet action and rallied worldwide condemnation of the Soviet Union.
And in 23 August 1950, up to 77,000 members of the Army Organized Reserve Corps were called involuntarily to active duty to fight the Korean War. And my father was one of those.
So this is a little personal history. On 23 August 1958, units of our 7th Fleet moved into the Taiwan area to support Taiwan against Chinese communists. This massive concentration of our Pacific Fleet in the Kwimoi-Matsu area prevented the invasion by China. Marines from Okinawa prepared to reinforce Chinese nationalists at Taiwan.
And on 23 August 1991, in the wake of a failed coup by hardliners in the Soviet Union, President Mikhail Gorbachev and Russian President Boris Yeltsin acted to strip the Communist Party of its power and take control of the army and the KGB.
And on 23 August 1994, a new Coast Guard record for the people rescued was set when 3,253 Cubans were rescued from dangerously overloaded craft during Operation Abel Virgil. And that's military history for today. What would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations can happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to being the worst day of your life, you can face a large number of illegal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will most always be an investigation and you can find yourself in the legal system. That's just the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events who never thought that would happen to them. With their Legal Defense for Self-Defense program, experienced attorneys are always ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To begin your membership today, go to uslawshield.com or call 877-448-6839 and use promo code FRONTLINES. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing. And now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a shoe store salesman was closing up for the night when he heard a woman scream. He rushed out into the mall, and the woman told him she'd just been robbed. The shoe salesman caught up with the thief and confronted him. The thief kicked at the salesman, but the Good Samaritan grabbed onto the man's foot, raising it up over his head, and flipped the thief onto his back. The thief got up and ran away. The shoe salesman returned the money to the young woman. The thief was never caught.
Thanks, Colonel. This is an unusual story simply because the shoe salesman was me about 40 years ago. I was an assistant manager at the mall shoe store. I'd just gotten out of the Marine Active Reserves and had recently graduated from college. Here's what I remember most after four decades of life. First, I didn't hesitate to come to the aid of the victim. I simply acted on my training. The idea to be afraid or not to help someone in need never occurred to me. You see, I was raised in a rural America with shared common values. I was taught that good always triumphs over evil, that I should always do the right thing, that my job as a man was to protect and defend the innocent among us. I always opened the door for a lady. I always respected my elders. I always came to the aid of people in need, even strangers. And who taught me these things? It was my parents and my grandparents and all my aunts and uncles. It was my church. It was the Marine Corps. It was all of rural society. Back then, people were taught to treat people with dignity and respect, that good people always come to the aid of those in need. Second, I remember that my city friends were different. They called me a fool for putting my own life in danger by pursuing that criminal. I could have been killed or injured. They said I should watch out for number one, and I should just call 911 and let the cops handle it. But here's the weird thing, folks. Now that I'm 66 years old, I still have this hero lurking inside me who still wants to rush to the aid of those in need. Now, true, I don't rush in as fast as I used to, but I still have to follow my heart, and my heart tells me to render aid to those in need. Here's what I tell my 20-something concealed carry students. My wish for you is that you decide to become protectors and defenders of the innocent. that you put aside your selfish nature, because that is the only way that America will truly become great again. There's a famous quote by Sir Edmund Burke that goes like this: all evil needs to succeed is for good men to do nothing. So I urge all of you to embrace the protector-defender lifestyle. Act out of the strongest part of your character, which will always be courage and not fear. Love your fellow man and not selfishness. Oh, and one other thing. Before you rush in where angels fear to tread, get some good training to enhance your chances of survival. If you're going to be a hero, you might as well live to enjoy it.
Well said, Skip. I didn't know that about you. That gives me one more thing to appreciate and kid you about. Our movie of the month is The Alternative Math. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments about the movie. Send your comments to me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Israel expert Leila Gilbert will join us. Then Vietnam vet J.C. Hardy will share his book on Vietnam. Quentin Roberts and I will talk with Navy's football coach about the upcoming season. And Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And it's now available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.